It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from radio's golden era. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Great mysteries coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear the adventures of Michael Shane with Jeff Chandler from 1948. Right now, it's America's favorite insurance investigator, yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Portrayed at this point by actor Edmund O'Brien, I suspect this is a rehearsal recording because there's not too much music within the broadcast or between scenes. The completed version was aired on CBS on March 21st, 1950.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
Mr. Dollar, this is Miss Ramey, Legal Department, Britannia Casualty and Life.
Oh, yeah, Miss Ramey. Thanks for calling back. I just wanted to get something straight. If a murderer is executed, does his policy pay off?
Well, that's an unusual question. As far as I know, yes, but we've never faced the situation.
Well, put on your makeup. It's liable to happen any minute.
Edmund O'Brien in another transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Britannia Casualty and Life, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of Stuart Palmer, the man who wrote himself to death. Expense account item one, $123.42 air and miscellaneous travel expenses from Hartford to Chicago and the Cook County Jail.
Well, you can make up your own mind about him, Dollar. He's like all those writers. If he isn't guilty, he's crazy.
How are you, Lieutenant?
Oh, hi, Markowitz. This is Mr. Dollar.
Hello, how are
you, Mr. Dollar?
It's an insurance dick. He wants to talk to Palmer. Call him out, will you?
Sure thing, Lieutenant. Hey, Palmer, your mother's here.
I'll see you on your way out, Dollar.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Lieutenant.
Here's your boy, Mr. Dollar. You'll have to talk to him through the bridge.
Stuart Palmer?
Yeah.
My name is Dollar. Britannia Casualty and Life sent me out here. I understand you're in some difficulty. Is there anything I can do to help
you? You didn't come here to help me. You came to investigate my new policy.
Now, look.
I don't need your help or anybody else's. I paid my first premium. That's all you or the company need be concerned about.
They're concerned about the fact that you're being held on suspicion of murder.
That doesn't affect the policy.
Have you retained counsel?
That's none of your business.
Thanks for the cooperation. Nice to meet friends in a strange city. You can have them, Markowitz.
Thanks.
Well, Dollar? Lovable, isn't he?
What have you got on him?
Oh, not much. Some wino was killed in the Clark Street pool room. Palmer was holding one of the cues. We pulled him in with about 14 others.
When are you going to release him?
We're not sure. He's been in before, you know.
Tell me, what's the matter with him?
Who knows? He's a writer. Crime stuff. Hangs around the West Madison District a lot of the time. Calls it research.
Does he still have that Kenwood address?
Wait a sec. Yeah. 5715.
Well, I hope his wife is jollier than he is.
Oh, Mr. Martin, I was... Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were somebody else.
I am. My name is Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator.
Well, I'm sorry. We have all the insurance we can use.
I said investigator. I want to talk to you about your husband.
Oh, come in. Why do you do this to him? I know why. It's like he says. You're all after him. You don't like him because he's a genius. You don't understand him. You'll never understand
him. Now, wait a minute.
You can try all you want to. As Stuart says, when one human being does something better than another human being, that's when they attack him. Well, go ahead.
Look, Mrs. Palmer, I'm on your side. I'm not the police.
Oh.
Now, why don't you sit down? I'll explain the whole thing to you. Come on. That's better. Now, your husband took out a $100,000 life insurance policy last week.
Well, there's certainly nothing wrong with that.
Mrs. Palmer, please. This week, your husband is arrested on suspicion of murder.
There, now, you see? You don't know anything about him, and already you're accusing him of the most awful thing.
I am not accusing him of anything, Mrs. Palmer. I'm just trying to help. I talked with your husband a little while ago. He wasn't very cooperative. I'd hoped you would be.
Well, you put him in jail, and then you expect him to be cooperative.
Does he have a lawyer?
Yes, of course. Mr. Martin. That's who I thought you were.
Well, how does Mr. Martin feel about this?
Well, he's been very nice. Stuart isn't worried. Stuart knows that Mr. Martin can spring him any time he wants to.
I see. What does your husband write? Books?
Well, he used to write for the radio. But as he says, it's a very limited medium. So one morning he went to his agent and tore that contract up right in his face. And that very day he started to write his play. 140 pages.
Uh-huh.
With real people in every scene. He took every one of them from life.
Is the play about crime?
How did you know that?
Well, I met your husband doing a little research in jail.
Well, they put him in jail because they don't understand. As he says, they don't put a doctor to bed in a hospital because he's doing research on a dangerous disease. People don't know good from evil. That's what's wrong. They're afraid of the truth, and that's what Stuart writes. He practically lives with his subjects.
Criminals?
Yes, he studies them. Nobody can write believably about something unless they're familiar with it. That's the sacrifice he makes.
You don't get to see much of him, do you?
Well, his work is infinitely more important than I am. But as soon as his play is produced, we're going away together. Atlantic City, Bermuda. The manuscript has been in New York for 6 months now, so it shouldn't be long before he hears.
What has your husband's income been for the past 6 months?
Well, there hasn't been much. But great art is often born of poverty.
But $100,000 insurance policies aren't. Who's this man, Neil Beasley, your co-beneficiary?
Co-beneficiary? Well, if you're going to sit here and be insulting, perhaps you'd better leave.
Perhaps I'd better. You mentioned an agent. What's his name?
George Michaelkoff. He's in the Ingram building.
Crazy. That guy is crazy. You can't do business with a guy like that. Art, he talks. Everything's got to be art. Spends his time with bums, and he calls it art.
Hasn't he done anything for 6 months, Mr. Michaelkoff?
Not with me. Well, let's face it, not with nobody. You know, he could have been a good writer, this boy. But he was too arty, not commercial. Then, boom, he's got to write a play. And where is it? Probably in the bottom drawer of Halstein's desk. And it's going to stay there. Here's a copy. Take it along and read it.
Thanks. What about this research he does?
Research? Is that what he told you? I had to go down to the county jail and bail him out. Twice. That's what washed me up. Someday they're going to catch him with the goods on him. You know, maybe it started out to be research, but it ain't now.
Well, how did it start?
With a guy named Neil Beasley.
Neil Beasley?
Oh, you heard of him, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the boy. He took Palmer under his wing, and that's where he still is. I don't know. Maybe he can't get out. Beasley came up to the office with Palmer once. What a character.
Where does this Beasley hang out, you know?
Who knows? Nasty neighborhoods.
Expense account, item 2, 80 cents, cab fare to a nasty neighborhood. After a lot of questions and bad bourbon, I came across a character who called himself Roscoe. Roscoe was the walking who's who of the district. When I mentioned the name Beasley, he swallowed his drink, wiped the back of his hand over his mouth, and leaned over the table toward me.
Beasley. Let's see. Beasley.
Come on, here. Here's something to stimulate your memory.
Oh, yes, of course. Beasley, Neil Beasley. Been a friend of mine for years. Slipped my mind. Getting old. Beasley was born in Cincinnati of well-to-do parents. They say he attended Harvard, but perhaps it's only a story. You know how stories start.
Skip the history. Where can I find him?
Any number of places. If the racetrack was open, you'd find him there, but the racetrack ain't open. There is his place of residence.
Where is that?
I don't know, but he must live somewhere.
Obviously. What would you suggest?
You familiar with the Atomic Tavern up the street?
Oh, I'm a stranger in town.
Peoria?
No.
You have the face of a Peoria salesman. I don't know, something in the eyes. Yes, well, the Atomic Tavern up the street.
Thanks, Roscoe.
You never did say where you were from.
Hartford, Connecticut. If you're ever in town, look me up. Four blocks away, squeezed between a delicatessen and a shoe parlor, I came upon the Atomic Tavern. It exploded just as I arrived.
Yeah, and stay out. That's no name to call a lady. Oh, come right in, sir. Come in. Anybody with a civil tongue is welcome, sir.
Thanks.
Here, boys. Mm-hmm.
Neil Beasley around?
Eh? Who wants him?
My name is Johnny Dollar. I'm a friend of Stuart Palmer's.
Well, you tell him that. He's at the back table there. All right, boys, come on. What do you have? Don't bother me. And he didn't bother me anymore.
Your name, Beasley?
Boy, I love
Mr. Beasley. Who are you?
Mr. Dollar.
What's your business, Dollar?
Insurance, investigation end. Can I sit down? I'm working for a company that holds a policy on the life of Stuart Palmer.
Insurance racket. I wonder how it started. I suppose somebody back in Rome bet Julius Caesar 10 drachmas he wouldn't live through the 15th of March and won. What do you want with me?
Well, I'm looking for somebody who'll make some sense. Maybe you're it. I understand you're Palmer's beneficiary.
That's right. He's a good boy.
Yeah, but he's not a good risk. The company insures a radio ride. I come out here and learn he's a petty criminal.
What's your problem, Dollar? Why don't you cancel the policy?
Well, I will if I can. Tell me, what got him started?
Well, put yourself in his place. He spends a lot of time around here learning so he can write good stuff. He writes good stuff, so good they won't buy it, so he falls back on his education.
That's logical, but illegal.
Oh, they'll get him. They'll get me, too. It's fate. The bumps on your head, the lines in your hands, the stars, destiny. Who can stop it?
Well, that's quite a philosophy you got. I was looking toward the front of the building. I hadn't seen him come in, but it was Stuart Palmer. He was standing at the elbow of the bar, obviously looking for his friend. When he spotted me, he started for the door.
Oh, sit down, Dollar.
That's my arm, Beasley.
Sit down and leave him alone. The cops released him. Just leave him alone.
Let's go, Beasley. Oh!
Hey, Dollar, watch the furniture. Lay off, will you? Let's put your
door. By the time I got outside, he was half a block away, heading west. I knocked over several West Madison Street characters, and then it suddenly occurred to me that the only reason I was chasing him was because he was running away from me. I was 50 feet behind him when he rounded a Walgreens drugstore on the corner.
Read all about it.
For a second, I lost him. Then I saw him. He wasn't running. He was turned toward me. Palmer! Don't! The crowd! I bent over the newsboy just long enough to see that he was dead. And I started after Palmer again. There was no mistake about it. He wanted that policy, and he'd kill to keep it.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. But first, the screen-sophisticated, caustic Mr. Belvedere, alias Clifton Webb, will swap quips with Bing Crosby on the Groner CBS show this Wednesday night. Now, with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
I lost Palmer in the next block. If daylight had held for a little longer, maybe I could have stopped the whole thing. I looked at my watch. It was 6:05. The Hartford office was closed. I headed back for a phone in the Walgreens drugstore. I got to the corner just as the police and the person of Lieutenant Carrigan pulled up.
All right, you people. They're away.
Dollar, what the devil are you doing here? Look at that kid, Carrigan, lying there. If you hadn't let that maniac out, the boy would still be hawking his papers.
Hey, wait a minute. Back off. What are you talking about?
Who do you think did it? Palmer.
Palmer? Are you sure?
Yeah, he was shooting at me. What'd you let him out for?
Oh, look, Dollar, there are laws. I told you earlier we didn't have much on him. He was clear.
Well, you're sure not clear on this one. Kid only had 3 papers left.
I think you better tell me what happened, Dollar.
Well, let's move away from here.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, folks, why don't you go home? Come on, move, huh?
I don't know what there is about people.
They're just glad it wasn't their kid. Well, here's the tale. I came down here to find a guy named Neil Beasley, a friend of Palmer's. Palmer showed up in the joint. When he saw me, he made a dash up the street. I took out after him, and when I got to the corner, he opened up. The kid was standing next to me. After the gunfire, I went after Palmer again. Believe me, I wish I'd caught him.
Yeah. Sergeant?
Yes, Lieutenant.
Put out a general on Stuart Palmer. All the dopes in my office.
Yes.
Why would he want to kill you?
That's a $100,000 question, Lieutenant. I'll be in the drugstore. Gotta make a phone call. Sandal?
Yes?
Sorry to bother you at home. I'm on the Palmer case out of your Hartford office.
Oh, yes. Mr. Dollar, isn't it?
That's right.
How are you making out?
Well, things couldn't be worse. Your only move is to cancel the policy, sir. How soon can you do that? On good grounds?
Well, I couldn't get word from the East until tomorrow afternoon at the earliest.
Well, if you can't do it tonight, just forget the whole thing.
Well, I don't understand.
Well, the police have put out a general alarm for the policyholder, dead or alive. And the odds are on the bad side.
Oh, all right, Dollar. I'll do what I can. I'll get on the phone to Hartford as soon as I hang up.
Good. I won't keep you waiting. Bye. Expense account item 4. $1.80 cab fare back to Mrs. Palmer's apartment. On the way, I suppose I should have been worried about the $100,000 worth of policy. But that didn't seem to bother me. There was the newsboy, who never knew what hit him. And there was Palmer's wife. I was going to have to tell her about it. But I knew, even before I got to the apartment, that she'd never believe me.
I don't believe you.
Of course you don't. And you don't want to. You don't want to believe anything bad about him. You want to just go on complimenting yourself on being married to the greatest man on earth. But you're way wrong. Where is he?
I don't know. And you can't make me believe you. Why would he kill anybody?
Well, my guess is that he's doing it for you.
Oh, that's a terrible thing to say. He wouldn't do anything wrong, even for me.
He took out an insurance policy that he couldn't afford. Why do you think he did that?
I don't know. I never understood about business.
Well, he sure got you. Some people have collie dogs, and he's got you. He comes home, pats you on the head, so you'll look up at him and tell him how wonderful he is. You know why? Because nobody else will.
You just don't understand. You just don't understand at all.
How long has it been since he treated you like a woman? Bought you things like candy, flowers. When was the last time he spent an evening with you?
Why are you saying these things?
Well, I'm trying to tell you that he failed, both as a writer and as a husband. Don't you see? He's trying to make it up to you. He wants the police to kill him so you'll collect the insurance.
That's a lie.
Where is he, Marion?
Oh. Hello? Yes? No, he's here now. Why do you say that? No. Stuart, where are you? He hung up.
Well, look who's here. I wish Palmer was as easy to find as you are.
You won't find him here.
Does she know where he is?
No, he just phoned her and wouldn't tell her.
Well, looks like a long night.
Yeah. For her, too. Mind if I ride back to the Madison District with you?
That's quite a theory, Dollar. What happens to a guy to get him in a mess like this?
I don't know. Burned too many bridges, I guess. Made a stand with his agent. Told everybody he'd show him he was right. Now he can't do it.
Oh, people. I don't know. Maybe I've been in homicide too long. I used to think a lot about things like this. You know, wonder about what started these characters, what got them to the place where I'd have to go after them. No more. Their problems aren't mine. All I worry about now is how to get them without getting anybody else hurt.
You've got a nice, simple job, Lieutenant Carrigan.
Yeah. I was thinking of that. You want him alive?
The insurance company does.
I hope it works out for you. I can't take any chances. We always try to save him for a trial. But if you're right about this one, he'll come out with a gun. Those are the kind we have to stop.
You know, this could turn into a very unpleasant situation. The lieutenant was kind enough to drop me at the Atomic Tavern. The place was empty. The sirens had frightened most of the clientele out of the precinct. All except one. He sat in the same position, at the same table, with what looked like the same glass of beer. Hello, Beasley.
Mr. Beasley. I was expecting you. Sit down.
Thanks.
How is the insurance business?
Well, sometimes we sell too much. You know where Palmer is?
Surely, always know where Palmer is. He tells me things he wouldn't tell anyone else.
You may not care, Mr. Beasley, but you just made yourself an accessory to insurance fraud.
Not unless I tell the police where he is. And then your company is out the $100,000.
And you're in $10,000.
I'll tell you the truth. I don't want that money. I don't want a penny of that money. Looked good at first. He wanted to give his wife a break. Offered me $10,000 to help him out.
How did you help him out?
Well, take right now, for instance. I could have tipped the cops twice a minute since it happened. In fact, I was supposed to. Cops would have killed him. Wife and I would have collected our money. But I can't do it.
Isn't it a little late for boy scouting?
No. No, not if you could talk him out of it.
Where is he?
No cops.
No cops.
just as soon as I finish my beer.
We walk down Halstead with the red streetcars rumbling by and the fruit trucks and the chicken wagons. I didn't notice the name of the street we turned west on, but a block and a half later, we stopped, two doors away from a basement barbershop.
Well, that's where he is. You're crazy to go in there.
Are you staying out here?
No. No, I'm going in. But I'm crazy, too.
Really?
That's why you should never listen to a guy like me. Farmer's got nothing to lose. How much do they pay you for getting killed?
Come on, if you're going, let's go.
Okay. Farmer, it's Beasley. Let me in.
Good work, Neil. Bring him in quick.
You've got a good line, Beasley.
Mr. Beasley, so good I believe it myself.
What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, Palmer, it's a bad deal all the way around. What do you want to do, make history? You won't go down in any books.
What's got into you? You helped me lay out the whole thing.
Oh, yes, it looked good, but it won't work.
He's right, Palmer, it won't work. I put through a cancellation request on your policy.
But it hasn't gone through yet. If it had, you wouldn't have come in here.
It's no good, Palmer. Even if it doesn't come through, they'll fight it in court after you're dead. We've got too much against you.
How far will they get without your testimony? You aren't going to be around to give it.
Well, that's no good either. If you kill me, that'll clinch it. Oh, come on, use your head, Palmer. You've got a chance. The newsboy is only a second-degree rap. There was no premeditation.
You're trying awful hard to save that company of yours $100,000.
Listen, there isn't a commission big enough to make me come here.
All right, then why did you come?
I don't know. Maybe because way back in my mind, I thought to myself, I can get to this guy. Maybe it was your wife that made me come. I just saw her, Palmer. You know, you aren't doing her any favors by getting yourself killed. She loves you too much. You can't buy a thing like that off with $100,000.
They're coming. I didn't tip them. They must have followed us down.
It doesn't make any difference how they get here. Just so they come. Well, watch it, Dollar. Stay away from me. Nobody's going to stop me now. This is what they all wanted. Like the big literary agent with the big promises. Great play, he tells them. Yes, and the old friends. They'll cut the story out of the papers and they'll save it in the desk drawer. Poor Stu, they'll say. He could have been a good boy. Well, all right, they can save it. It's going to pay off. That's what counts.
It won't pay off, and you know it. The only guy that wants it this way is you, because you haven't got the guts to go on.
Palmer, we know you're in there. We'll give you 30 seconds, Palmer.
I'll be right out.
Palmer, it's waste. Palmer, it's for nothing.
It's no use, Dollar. He's going to do it. Better lie down on the floor.
Stuart, are you in there?
Marion. Marion, get away from here.
I want to talk to you, Stuart. Open the door.
No. Come on in here. Marion, what are you doing here?
You're the lieutenant. Don't do it, Stuart. I don't want money that way.
Wait a minute. Did they make you come in here?
No, I wanted to come. Don't do it, Stuart. Please.
Goodbye, Marion.
Stuart, don't go. Stuart, come back.
Let go of me.
Get down on the floor.
No!
Come on,
no,
get down. No. There's nothing you can do.
Stop, Palmer! Stop!
Stuart!
As you know, Palmer's policy was not canceled before he died. But I'm sure that with a staff of legal geniuses employed by the Britannia Company, you'll come out all right. A soft judge gave Beasley 60 days for attempted insurance fraud, and that was it. Expense account item 6, same as item 1, transportation Chicago to Hartford. Expense account total, $635.24. Oh, almost forgot. Item 7, 35 cents. Tip to Western Union boy. Telegram from Marion Palmer. Contents? Thought you'd like to know. Stewart's play accepted for production on Broadway. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 21st, 1950 on CBS, starring Edmund O'Brien. The first actor ever heard in that role was part of the audition or pilot of the show, and that was William Powell, who ended up turning it down so he could star as Richard Diamond, private detective, on another network. No less than six leading men picked up the baton over the course of the series, with the most popular being Bob Bailey, who began in October of 1955 with a revised Johnny Dollar series, heard 5 days a week in 15-minute episodes for One Big Story. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now another story from the adventures of Michael Shane. It's the case of the Model Murder. The syndicated episode released for syndication in 1948 stars Jeff Chandler.
Okay, Shane, get the picture. A guy in front of you with a .38, a guy in back with a rifle, and you with nothing. If wishing will make it so, you better start wishing to be somewhere else fast, because...
This is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to Michael Shane, that reckless, red-headed Irishman back at his old haunts in New Orleans, in another transcribed episode. We call it Case of the Model Murder.
Waiter, my compliments to the chef. This shrimp's superb.
Look, maybe I'm talking out of turn, Mr. Franklin. After all, you're hiring me, but 20 a day is mighty short wages for some of the things I get involved in. And I've learned that the phony cases usually have the biggest hospital bills.
Phony, Mr. Shane?
Yeah. I get a message that you want to see me urgently. Okay, I come dashing down here, expecting you to be tearing your hair or dying from a leaky artery. So what do I find?
You find me in a seafood bar, enjoying New Orleans' most succulent river shrimp and sipping excellent dry Manhattan.
That's right. Then you give me a story about a girl, Marianne Chevney. I have to find her and bring her to her home by Friday midnight or she loses $8 million.
Is that too complicated?
No, Mr. Franklin, it's too simple. Instead of giving me any details, you go on chewing your shrimp.
And sipping my Manhattan. Waiter, one more of the same. Dry. You sure you won't join me, Mr. Shane?
Look, this picture you gave me, is it the only one you have?
The most recent, yes. It was taken a few weeks before Marianne ran away from home 7 years ago.
Oh.
She never got along with her father, you see.
What about this Friday business? Why Friday after 7 years?
Simply because Friday at midnight, Marianne will be 25.
Uh-huh. So she's got to return home by then or she doesn't get her money.
Brilliant. Wait, another order of shrimp, please.
You're sure giving me a lot of time. This is Thursday. I've got one whole day. Marianne's father was your partner, half-owner of Chevney Franklin Importers, huh?
That's right.
Chevney died over 3 weeks ago. Why the sudden concern now?
Oh, I haven't been idle. I've been running ads for the girl in the papers.
Yeah, you've been a busy little bee, you have.
Mr. Shane...
All right, what happens to the $8 million if Marianne Chevney doesn't get home in time?
It goes into the business.
But you're the business now.
That's right. Don't look so perplexed. It's quite simple, really.
Yeah, something simple. You're hiring me to find her so that you can lose $8 million.
Precisely, Mr. Shane. Waiter, another dry Manhattan.
From the minute I walked into the seafood bar at the Carlton Manor Hotel and sat down opposite Franklin of Chevney Franklin Importers, I knew I was walking into something with more angles and a course in advanced geometry. My first impulse after hearing his story was to tell Mr. Franklin to go peddle his shrimp. Only I suddenly remembered that the only jingle I could raise in my pockets was the sound of my car keys rattling around. It seems his partner, Chevney, had died some 3 weeks before, and $8 million he couldn't take with him was waiting for his errant daughter, Marianne, who'd run away from home 7 years ago when she was 18. I was supposed to find the girl and bring her to her late father's house before Friday midnight. Tomorrow night. Well, I took another look at the photo of the girl. The words Harrison Halstead Model Agency were stamped on the back. At least she'd worked there 7 years ago. I decided to give it a whirl. The receptionist was a sugar blonde with a cooperative look in her eyes.
Well, I sure would like to help you, Mr. Shane, but I really don't know any Miss Chevney.
And you handle a lot of models here.
Oh, that's right.
This photograph help you any?
Pretty. No, I'm afraid not.
It's taken 7 years ago.
I just bet you'd go for something a little older.
And you'd have a good breath. The boss around?
Well, yes, Mr. Shane, but I don't know.
Miss Winters, I want to... Oh. Yes, sir?
Mr. Shane's looking for a girl by the name of Chevy, Mr. Halsey.
Sorry, can't help you.
Now, this photograph...
No. What do you want with her?
Well, she's got $8 million coming to her.
Sorry, Mr. Shane.
Well, that's okay.
Miss Winters, get Miller on the phone, will you? He said he'll be ready at 2 this afternoon.
Yes, sir.
He recognized the photo.
Did he, Mr. Shane?
You're a real good kid. Company girl, loyal.
Thank you.
Follow the rules.
Uh-huh.
Look, I'm just trying to help a penniless girl get $8 million.
Well, take one of our cards, Mr. Shane. You just might want to come back.
Thanks. I don't have $8 million, but...
You don't need $8 million.
How much?
Just enough for a rye steak and baked potato.
It's a deal. Miss Winters struck me as a girl with the wrong name. There's nothing chilly in her attitude. As for this Halstead character, he was one of those guys with a monogram complex. Everywhere you looked, you found H.H. staring you in the face. Harrison Halstead. On his tie, on the pocket of his shirt, even the cigarette lighter on the reception desk had the same two H's sort of leaning against one another. And the agency card Miss Winters had given me, they were there, too. As I waited for the elevator, I turned the card over. The handwriting was nice and firm. Mady Carter, 2614 Mount York Avenue, might be able to help you. I thought, Shane, how would you get along without that winning personality of yours? Mady Carter's place was a little bungalow in a court. There was a light on behind curtains. I rang the bell.
Yes?
Miss Carter?
What do you want?
I'd like to talk to you.
What do you want?
I'm looking for Marianne Chevney.
I don't know anybody by that name.
Miss Winters at the Halstead Agency.
I can't. I don't know her. She isn't here.
Easy. You better lower the volume. What'll the neighbors think?
Come in.
Thanks. Now, look, Miss Carter, I'm not trying to do anything but find Miss Chevney so I can give her $8 million.
She doesn't want...
You see, it doesn't pay to keep secrets. Where is she?
I don't know.
Well, how do you know she doesn't want the money?
She told me.
Oh, you spoke to her.
No, no. Why don't you leave me alone? I don't know anything.
Look, all I want... Never mind, Miss Carter. Maybe I got a bum steer. Sorry I bothered you. I suppose I could have broken her down if I'd kept at it. But I suddenly found what I came for. There was an envelope face down on the desk. From where I was standing, I was able to read the return address on the flap. Big as life it was. The initials MC, apartment 5, and the address 318 East 54th Street, New York City. MC, Marion Chevney. As I drove back to town, I began to get a familiar feeling. Maybe I don't have eyes behind my head, but I do have a little spot between my shoulder blades that's got a special talent. If somebody's following me, it begins to itch. It had bothered me a little right after I left the Halstead Agency, but I didn't pay much attention to it. And right now, it was giving me the squirms in high gear, and I decided to do something about it. I pulled off the main road onto a side street, but quick. I parked, doused the lights, and waited. Cars kept going by, and I spotted a maroon job with one light dimmer than the other coming around the block for the second time. This time, it went about 100 yards past me, and then it parked. I waited. Nobody got out of the car. The spot between my shoulders stopped itching. I knew I was on solid ground. I got out of the car and started up the street. I saw the guy behind the wheel of the maroon job looking straight ahead as if he had nothing better to do than just sit there. I pulled the door open and slid into the front seat.
Huh? What's doing, champ?
Nice tail job.
No?
Pro job.
Well, you're not so bad yourself, spotting it.
New Orleans does that for me. There's a feel to the city. You must be from out of town.
Yeah.
Working?
Yeah.
Jonathan Franklin?
Never heard of him.
Franklin and Chevney importers. Bananas, I think.
I hate bananas.
Who is it?
You're doing all the talking, champ.
This is a tough town for strangers.
Not so tough.
You're not so tough either. Yeah, right, nice tie you got. Slips up nice and easy. You can't talk, champ, but you can sure listen. That's a very pretty color you're turning. Now, let's see. Yeah, shoulder holster, 45 automatic. Okay, you're going to breathe now, but don't overdo it. And take a tip. I don't like being followed, and strangers in town ought to be courteous.
You're a pretty tough boy, Shane.
No, I'm the easygoingest guy in the world. I just don't like being tailed. Remember, mind your manners when you're in a strange city, champ. Franklin was in the dining room of the hotel, carving up some rare roast beef with Yorkshire pudding on the side. I dropped into a chair on the other side of his table and told him what I'd found out. As usual, he got real interested.
New York, eh? Will you join me, Mr. Shane?
You're real worried about getting Marianne Chevney back here before tomorrow night, aren't you?
Oh, you can't rush things, my boy.
Ah, this case smells clear across the river. Don't you trust me, Mr. Franklin?
One moment, Mr. Shane. Wait up.
Yes, sir?
Bring me a phone, please. You were saying...
I said somebody's been tailing me. I'd like to know why.
You're implying, Mr. Shane, that because I don't trust you, I've hired someone to watch you?
In a nutshell.
Now, that is not true. But the fact that someone is following you is very disconcerting.
Your telephone, Mr. Franklin?
Oh, thank you, waiter. You pardon me, Mr. Shane. Travel desk, please. Hello? This is Jonathan Franklin speaking. Will you arrange for a charter plane with the New Orleans Charter Service, please? In the name of Michael Shane. In about an hour, it's now 8:30. The plane is to go to New York and leave here at 9:30. Thank you.
Well, you're full of surprises, Mr. Franklin.
And I've got another one for you.
Yeah?
If you succeed in bringing Marianne back here before midnight tomorrow, there's a $1,000 bonus for you.
Sometimes, Mr. Franklin, your conversation is positively brilliant. A chartered plane to New York and a $1,000 jackpot at the end of the rainbow. I felt like a captain of industry as the plane got the right of way from the airport tower and circled in for a landing. New York, great little city. It was 4 o'clock in the morning when the taxi pulled up in front of 518 East 54th Street. I told the cabbie to wait. What's money to me? Took the stairs of the brownstone two at a time. Apartment 5 was at the end of the hall on the first floor. I knocked. Nothing happened. I knocked again. Nobody could sleep like that. Then I tried the door. Locked. Apparently, Marianne was a dirty stay out late. Across the hall, the door to apartment number 4 said manager. I walked over and started knocking again.
Well, what is it? What is it?
I'm sorry to get you out of bed, old time, but I'd like you to open the door to apartment 5.
Are you crazy waking a body at 4 a.m?
Look, I'm a private detective. I'm looking for the girl who has that apartment. I want to get in, so I'll be there when she gets home.
Private detective? I'm sorry. If you was a police, it'd be...
Does this give me the necessary rank?
$5.
All right, make it 10.
Well, why don't you tell me he was a private detective in the first place? Come on. Hey, light switch in there.
Yeah.
Make yourself comfortable.
Thanks. Here's your pound of flesh.
Now, you won't tell her that I let you...
What's the matter with you?
Hey, over there, on the floor in the hall.
First, I saw a lot of blonde hair. And then I saw there was a girl attached to it. She probably would have been real pretty without that bullet hole in her forehead. A glutton by the name of Jonathan Franklin had waved an ice-cold scent in front of my nose, but strangely enough, it still had a strong odor. My assignment was to find Marianne Chevney and get her back to her late dad's home so she could collect $8 million, according to the terms of her inheritance. Well, I picked up the trail at the Harrison Halstead Model Agency, where Miss Chevney had once worked. Mr. H.H. and his secretary, Miss Winters, acted like I was after atomic secrets. And as I left, Miss Winters shoved a card in my hand with the name and address of Mady Carter. Miss Carter had the willies bad, but I picked up the information that the girl I was looking for was in New York.
Franklin stopped eating roast beef long enough to charter a plane for me. And I arrived at the end of the trail just in time to find my quarry still warm, but with a bullet in her head.
Oh, my police. We'll have to call the police.
Yeah, but not before I make a phone call long distance.
Well, you won't be long now, will you? Son, because they get real mad. If you don't tell
long me. Distance, I want you to get me Mr. Jonathan Franklin at the yeah. Carlton Manor in New Orleans.
Oh, you...
Collect.
Oh,
Michael Shane at this end. That's right. This is Circle 65970.
Yeah, my reputation. You know this will be in the papers, don't you? Be police all over the place and reporters.
Yeah, yeah, and her blood stains your nice carpet,
yeah,
too. I feel real
for
sorry
that?
For you. Hello?
Well, don't be long.
Hello, Mr. Franklin.
Yes. Yes, what is it, please?
Take your earmuffs off. You might like to hear this.
Oh, what is it, Shane?
Just a second, Mr. Franklin. Look, old timer, don't you have a telephone in your own apartment?
Yes. Well, I never thought of that.
Well, think of it.
Well, Shane?
The gal is dead.
Really?
Yeah, what do you want me to do?
Come on home. You've done a good job.
You're not sorry?
No. Should I be?
What about the $1,000 bonus? I guess that's cold turkey, huh?
We'll talk about it when you get back.
Yeah, yeah.
Cold turkey, did you say?
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned it. That's an excellent thought. With a glass of cold milk, of course. Goodbye, Mr. Shane.
I had a little time before the cops would come, so I started moseying around the apartment. First thing that caught my eye was a cigarette lighter on an end table. It looked familiar. Very familiar. And all of a sudden, I knew why. There was a monogram on it. Yeah, two H's sort of leaning against each other. I got the long-distance operator again and put in a call to Mr. Halstead, also collect.
There is no answer.
Are you sure you got the right guy?
Harrison Halstead's residence in New Orleans, Orange 2435.
Okay, thanks, operator.
Shall I try later?
No, thanks. I didn't know how, but it was pretty obvious that Halstead was in this thing up to his ears. I kept on wandering around the living room, and then I found it. There was a letter on the table in a girl's handwriting. The date was just 2 days ago, and the letter started with the words, "Dear Matey." I didn't have to read the signature to know it was Mary Ann. I took a good look at the girl on the floor. Her hair was blonde, only there was about a 1/16 of an inch of dark brunette showing at the hairline. I got real smart then. I finally figured it out. This girl was Matey Carter. And the frightened girl back in New Orleans was really Mary Ann Chevney. Only somebody else had apparently made the same mistake, and it was my guess he was hightailing it back to New Orleans to correct his error. I made a quick call to homicide to pay my respects and then headed for the airport. Luckily, the plane was ready to go when I got there. Oh, Shane, you had the girl in your hands and then you waltzed off with a dream. One thing was clear. Mary Ann Chevney had plenty to worry about. It took me just 10 minutes from the time I landed back in New Orleans to get to her place. The door to Marianne's bungalow was locked, and there was no answer to my banging. I started around the house trying to get a look-see inside. Nothing, nobody home. When I got around to the rear and peeked in the bedroom, I saw why. The place was empty. Either she'd decided to run, or else she'd been taken on a trip without a return ticket. I scrambled over to Carlton Manor, and guess what? Yeah, Jonathan Franklin was eating.
It seems you made a mistake, Mr. Shane.
How do you know?
The papers. Wasn't Mary Ann who was killed in New York. It was a girl by the name of Carter, Madeline Carter.
You still want me to find Mary Ann?
Oh, of course. Let's see. 3 now. You only have 9 hours left. Would you have some lunch? Bouillabaisse.
No, thanks.
Don't you ever find time to eat?
Yeah, but I'm peculiar. I only eat 3 meals a day. Marianne Chevney's life was in danger, and I wanted to get to her while she was still hale and hearty. I drove over to Halstead's agency. Miss Winters still had that cooperative look.
Well, hi there.
Hi, where's your boss?
Out.
Been in today?
Well, I know. As a matter of fact, he hadn't.
Did you try to reach him at home?
Yes, I did.
He wasn't there, huh?
Oh, is something wrong?
Something's very wrong, sweetheart. Look, that note you slipped me last night.
Not the kind I usually write.
Matey Carter. You knew I was looking for Marianne Chevney.
Well, I said Matey Carter might be a help. She's a friend of Miss Chevney's.
You didn't know there was a switch?
Switch?
Matey Carter was in New York. She was killed last night.
Killed?
Halstead could have taken a plane up there last night, couldn't he?
Well, I don't know.
As far as you know, he could have, couldn't he?
Well, yes. I haven't spoken to him since last night.
Tell me, is he a bachelor?
Yeah.
Lives alone?
Uh-huh.
In town or in the country?
Both.
Oh, he has a country place. Where?
Well, I'll tell you in a minute. You want me to look it up?
You bet I do, sweetheart. If I'm not too late, it might make the difference between a long and wealthy life or a 45 slug to Marianne Chevney. It took me almost an hour to drive out to where Halstead had his beach home. The place had a real subtropical flavor, bordering on the Gulf and surrounded by a mass of lush undergrowth and stubby cypress trees. I didn't bother to announce myself. I just barged in. She'd been here, all right. There was a woman's jacket over a chair in the big paneled living room, and her purse half open on the floor. I went to the back door and opened it and looked out. Bounced off a stone, and I caught a glint of the bullet as it whined off on its ricochet. It had come from the left. I ducked back into the house. He had shells to burn, whoever he was. There was no sense my perching like a sitting duck, so I started toward the front. The living room had been empty a moment before, but now there was a man in it, a man with a gun. Halstead.
Stop where you are, Mr. Shane, and raise your hands.
Where's Marianne?
It's none of your business. I said raise your hands.
Now look, Halstead, don't be coy about this thing. There's a guy out there with a gun, a big gun, and he's got big ideas.
So have I. Move back. Against the wall.
Look, who's working for who around
here?
You've
been sticking your nose in where it doesn't belong, Shane. Told you yesterday, if there was anything about Marianne Chevney you ought to concern yourself with.
What did you do with her?
Let's just say she's in protective custody.
Yours?
As I said, that's none of your business. But... Hello, champ. What's doing?
Still telling me, huh?
Yeah. And this time, no necktie.
Very bad taste.
Huh?
Drop that rifle.
I don't think so. You ought to practice more, you miss.
Oh, this is real cute. Champ is in the kitchen with a rifle, and you're in here with a pistol, Halstead. You both have a grudge against me, only you can't stop worrying about each other.
Shane, who is that man in the kitchen?
I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet, but I think he's after Marianne, too. Aren't you, champ?
Could be, but right now I get more pleasure. Missed again!
Just stick your head into that doorway once more. Now, Mr. Shane, I'll give you just 3 seconds to tell me what you want.
I told you.
I want the truth, now.
What difference does it make what I want with the girl if you're already...
All right, Shane, I warned you.
We'll be back in just a moment with Mike Shane and the thrilling climax to our story.
It was a second or two before I realized Halstead had fired at the laddie with the rifle, not me. But I wasn't inclined to administer first aid to Champ lying in the kitchen doorway because from the look on Halstead's face, he was getting ready for a repeat performance. And then I got a shock. Like when the shower suddenly turns from hot to cold. Marianne, the real Marianne, stepped into the room and went over to Halstead. I figured it was time to call a halt and settle who was who. Hello, Marianne.
You killed Mady.
No, the champ in the kitchen. That was his work.
Why don't you leave me alone, all of you?
All I've been trying to do is bring you back to your father's home by midnight tonight so you can inherit the $8 million he left you.
Marianne and I were married last night, Shane.
What?
So now the matter of her inheritance is my business. So why don't you leave us alone?
I will if Marianne or Mrs. Halstead will go back to her father's house.
But why, Mr. Shane? Why should I go back there?
Well, if the $8 million doesn't mean anything to you, the $1,000 I stand to collect means plenty to me. I knew it was the right time, 6 o'clock, when I walked into the dining room of the Carlton Manor. Jonathan Franklin was having breast of guinea hen under glass and a white wine.
Well, won't you sit down? I'll have the waiter get you.
No, plate. No, thanks.
Here. You look calm and relaxed, Mr. Shane. Success.
Yes.
Splendid. And Marianne?
I found her. And her husband.
Her husband?
That's right. Oh, your boy is down at headquarters, Mr. Franklin.
Headquarters? My boy?
Yes, the champ. He talked when he came to. He got a little overeager after he trailed me to Halstead's beach house, and Halstead winged him.
Oh.
The way I figured, it wasn't a question of Marianne getting back to her father's home before her 25th birthday.
No. This wine is delicious. 1929 Sauterne.
No, it was a question of whether or not she'd reach her 25th birthday. And that's why you had me searching for her, to find her so you could have her killed before she did.
Now, you're not going to spoil my dinner.
You know, there's an old saying, Mr. Franklin, the foolish person eats himself into the grave.
You say he talked?
Yes. He told us why he'd been following me. So that if I found Marianne, he could kill her.
He told us how he was sent to New York before I left. Oh, I should have guessed that, Mr. Franklin. It only takes 10 minutes to get to the airport from here. Why make the charter for an hour later?
You have a point.
And there was only one person besides myself and Marianne who knew the address of Mady Carter in New York.
Yeah. I should have thought of that, I suppose.
You finished with your dinner, Mr. Franklin? Because if you are, there are some men waiting for you in the lobby. Homicide detail.
You're spoiling my digestion, Mr. Shane.
Doesn't matter, Mr. Franklin. From now on, you'll be eating crow. Hearty appetite.
Mike, what I can't understand is why Mr. Franklin was so eager to get his partner's money. He must have made the same amount himself. After all, $8 million.
That's enough bait for anybody, sweetheart. With his appetite, maybe he needs $16 million to keep in groceries, especially with prices where they are today.
Oh, Mike, sugar, you're cute.
Now, I'll eat your steak. And will you have red wine served with it? Waiter, a sparkling burgundy, domestic, year of 1948.
This is your director, Bill Russo, again. Our story is based on characters created by Brett Halliday. The music is composed and conducted by John Duffy, and Michael Shane is portrayed by Jeff Chandler.
The Adventures of Michael Shane on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast later transmitted via Armed Forces Radio in 1948. And that concludes our hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.